Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Hey there, friends. Life can be as complex as the cases we explore, and sometimes it's tough to carry the weight of it all by yourself. We all have those stressors that we just need to get off our chest. Therapy can be that safe place where you can let it all out and work through what's weighing you down. Therapy isn't just for major trauma. It's also about learning to set boundaries and developing positive coping skills. Personally, I've found therapy to be incredibly empowering. It helps me become the best version of myself. If you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's completely online, making it convenient and flexible to fit into your busy life. Just fill out a quick questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. And if you feel the need to switch therapists, you can do so at any time without any extra charges. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/foul today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/foul, FOUL. Hello, friend. In the aftermath of tragedy, among the bouncing echoes of unanswered questions and unresolved grief, hindsight can emerge, shedding light on the dark corridors of the unknown. It can offer a sense of clarity where there was once confusion and mystery. It can reveal insights and understandings that were previously obscured. But hindsight is infallible. It might not always provide the definite answers that are so desperately wanted. Its application, therefore, should be gentle, with care and consideration. Before the devastating shooting at Lake Herman Road in December 1968, where Betty Lou Jensen and David Faraday lost their lives, no one had heard of the Zodiac Killer. No one knew of a killer who had a similar method, whose victimology followed a familiar pattern, and chosen locations echoed each other. As time continues to march forward, connections and links are made with knowledge only now available. Hindsight illuminates instances in the past that now may take on a new, terrible meaning. On June 4th, 1963, it was a bright and sunny day in Lompoc, California, situated just over an hour's drive from the city of Santa Barbara. Beautiful beaches and rugged coastlines were never far away. For the senior students at Lompoc High School, June 4th was Ditch Day, an official day just a few days before graduation. They would skip scheduled classes and enjoy a day to themselves instead. Robert George Domingos, known as Bobby to his friends, was 18 years old that year. Along with 17-year-old Linda Faye Edwards, they were two of those students looking forward to a day in the sun in place of their books. They had been a couple since Linda had moved to Lompoc in 1961 and had plans to marry later that year. The couple were happy and excited, relishing their impending freedom from high school and looking forward to exploring the world around them. They didn't know that bright sunny day was going to be their last. After telling Bobby's father they were going to the beach, they drove to a section of Gaviota Beach. just 22 miles east of the city. The beach lies next to the Route 101 freeway. The little spot they were headed to was secluded and quiet. They wanted to make the most of the afternoon sun. Bobby parked his 1957 Pontiac in a small area just next to the highway. They then made their way down a trail that snaked through the shrubs, alongside a stream and a small beach area. The events of those next few hours have been pieced together by police detectives. At around 3 p.m. that afternoon, Bobby and Linda were approached by a man who most likely quietly walked down the same trail they had to reach the beach and the shoreline. Finding the couple sunbathing, he was armed and had come to the scene prepared. On his person was a .22 caliber gun, a knife of some kind, boxes of ammunition shells, and sections of pre-cut rope. On the beach at Gaviota, detectives believed the unknown man forced Linda to tie Bobby's hands behind his back at gunpoint, using the pieces of rope he had brought with him. Once Bobby was secure, his attention moved to Linda as he began to tie her hands. But the injuries sustained by both these innocent teenagers showed at some point they managed to escape and flee for their lives. They ran up the stream in a desperate attempt to get away. The gunman, however, followed, tracing their steps and gaining on them with each stride. Arm outstretched, he began firing his gun. Repeated shots were fired into the backs of both Bobby and Linda. Gunshots that disabled them and made them fall onto the rough trail beneath them. As they fell, the gunman gained ground. As he reached them, he reloaded his weapon, took aim, and continued to fire. As the day wore on, the teenagers' parents in Lompoc started to worry where their children were. They were good kids, with not a hint of trouble in their backgrounds. Calls to friends went without new information. Questions on their whereabouts did not bring in answers. The following morning, Mr. Domingos made a missing persons report to the Lompoc Police Department. Police officers took the report, but were not overly concerned. The teens had not yet been missing for 24 hours, and would most likely return safe and well in their own time. They didn't know the brutality that had already taken place and the investigation that was awaiting them. As the evening hours began to close in on June 5th, Mr. Domingos was fearful. A family member remembered the small section of beach at Gaviota Beach, which the couple had visited before. They decided to go and check it for themselves. When they followed Highway 101 towards the beach location, they found Bobby's Pontiac parked up where he had left it. They were joined by a traffic patrolman, Officer Paul Schultz, who walked with them down the trail leading to the beach. As they followed the path of the stream, their eyes fell to the ground and focused in on what they were seeing. On the ground were stains, dark red in color, surrounded by shell casings. The fear Mr. Domingos had felt for his son and future daughter-in-law was rising. Officer Schultz walked alone that final 30 yards towards the ramshackle wooden shack that set back a little and inwards towards the bush. Old and weather-beaten, the shack did not look stable or in good condition. The blanket draped haphazardly across the opening, serving as a door, it showed evidence of burning with singed edges. As the officer looked inside with the aid of his flashlight, he made a gruesome discovery. Bobby Domingos lay face down, motionless on the ground. On top of him lay Linda Edwards. Lying on her back, her bathing suit had been cut open and her chest was exposed. She, too, showed no signs of life. Autopsies revealed that Bobby Domingos had been shot 11 times and Linda Edwards 8. Their lives were brutally cut short in a savage act of violence. The spot they were in was isolated. Sounds were masked by the roar of the sea and the coastline air circulating above them. No one heard those shots that ended their lives so abruptly. Homicide detectives and forensic officers flooded the scene, trying to preserve any evidence they could. Inside the shack next to the bodies of Bobby and Linda were used matches, boxes of .22 caliber ammunition, pieces of rope, and the couple's belongings. It looked like their killer had dragged their bodies into the shack before trying to set everything alight. The killer had then disappeared into the landscape with no witnesses and seemingly no way of being traced. 2 days later, the Santa Barbara News Press published an article highlighting investigators were hunting for clues in the murders of the Lompoc High School students. It would have been Linda's 18th birthday. Police had been talking to 3 local boys who had been involved in other crimes in the area, but as yet had not found any links to Bobby and Linda's murders. Friends of Linda, Shirley Niza and her husband-to-be, were due to go to the beach with the couple on that afternoon. Their plans were changed at the last minute in a decision that would have saved their lives. The Lompoc sheriff had 4 detectives working around the clock on the Domingos Edwards murders. Within days of the young couple being killed, they had interviewed over 40 individuals. No new leads came, and the unanswered questions continued to mount up. As the tragic case of Bobby and Linda began to go cold, 247 miles away, at Ocean Beach in San Diego, another horrifying scene unfolded. In less than 1 year, 2 more lives would be shattered, with no understanding of why. In 1960, 17-year-old Johnny Swindle joined the Navy. He grew up in Jasper, Alabama, and his enrollment took him to San Diego's National Training Center for 12 months. He emerged as a qualified radioman for the Navy's warships. His high school sweetheart, Joyce Arm, had been a constant support to him. The couple married in Alabama on January 18, 1964, when Johnny was 20 and Joyce was 19 years old. Within 5 days, they had begun their journey to San Diego, ready to start their new lives. Johnny was awaiting word of his next deployment with the Navy, and he had rented an apartment at Paradise Court, just a few blocks from the ocean. Joyce adored the water, the prospect of daily beach walks and cliffside strolls filled her with excitement. It was a magical time for the young couple. Yet just 1 week after they arrived, their story took a tragically abrupt turn, ending in the cruelest manner imaginable. On February 5th, 1964, they took a walk across the cliff path. From the raised position, they could look out onto the crashing waves as they came onto the beach below. Hey friends, picture this. You're planning an epic international trip, and you can chat with locals in their language. How cool would that be? Or maybe you want to enjoy foreign true crime documentaries without the subtitles. Learning a new language can open so many doors, but let's be real, traditional methods can be a drag. That's why I'm excited to tell you about Rosetta Stone, the most trusted language learning program out there. Rosetta Stone has been around for 30 years, helping millions of users master 25 languages, from Spanish and French to Korean and Arabic. The key to their success? Total immersion. Their intuitive methods let you pick up a language naturally, starting with words, then phrases, and finally full sentences. One feature I love is True Accent, which gives you feedback on your pronunciation, like having a personal trainer for your accent. And the convenience? Amazing. You can switch between your desktop and mobile app, and even download lessons for offline use. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, Foul Play listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off, unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today today. At around 8:15 to 8:30 p.m., as they admired the views of the coastline, five shots suddenly rang out through the night air. Both Johnny and Joyce were hit, and they dropped to the ground. They had been shot by a sniper, hiding in a location they couldn't see. As they lay gravely wounded, a figure slowly walked up to them. Once level, he looked down and raised his arm. The .22 caliber weapon fired further shots at the couple, this time at close range. The shooter then leaned down and searched Johnny's pockets. He stole his wallet and his wristwatch before leaving the scene. Minutes later, 35-year-old Ed Nelson found the stricken couple lying motionless on the ground and ran to get help. Joyce Swindle died almost immediately from her injuries. Johnny was found alive, but only barely. He was rushed to the hospital. 2 hours later, he also lost his life. This young couple had been robbed of their lives and their futures. No one knew why anyone would do such a thing. The hunt was now on to find a double killer. On the hillside, around 50 feet from where the Swindles were found, five shell casings were scattered on the ground. In the hours after the killing, detectives, reporters, and members of the public had gathered in this area, shocked at what happened. It made any hope of identifying footprints or finding further evidence of value almost an impossibility. The police deployed a helicopter to fly over the area repeatedly and scan the rooftops in case the killer had thrown away the murder weapon as he fled the scene. They found nothing. People in the area around the time of the shooting were asked to come forward and be eliminated. Some heard shots, some hadn't heard anything, but none could provide a sighting of the shooter or any further information.
And Shank, where were the couple standing when they were shot?
By the seawall in this observation point right below here.
Were they apparently admiring the seascape at the time?
Well, certainly that's a possibility. Their landlady says they frequently took walks along the beach in the evening. There was an unopened box of Valentine candy on the wall alongside. I think that's a logical assumption, yes.
He shot five times then. From what distance?
Well, that's around 50 feet away in a straight line and, I'd say 15 or 20 feet higher above where they were standing.
What was the caliber of the bullets?
.22 caliber.
You don't know whether it was a rifle or a pistol?
No, we don't.
Did you find any cartridges right near the bodies?
Two ejected cartridges nearby, yes.
The assumption possibly then is that after shooting from long range, he went down and shot at closer range?
Well, at least there are two empty cartridges there. I wouldn't care to assume anything if I don't know any more about them.
Thanks very much, Lieutenant Shank.
The autopsy revealed Joyce had received a gunshot to the back of the head. Johnny had died from two shots to his head, one in his right temple and the other in his left ear. Both had further gunshot wounds to their torsos and legs. Just like the killing of Bobby Domingos and Linda Edwards, the murder of the Swindles was a case that went cold. no new leads enabled the investigation to move forward and get closer to catching the individual who took their lives. It wouldn't be until 6 years later that the potential links began to be made.
This old newsreel just discovered in the KEYT archives is the only known film footage of the crime scene. It shows the area around the beach shack where the killer shot the teens and inside where he dragged their bodies and tried to burn it down to hide the evidence. The last time this footage aired publicly was 42 years ago, when no one could have known its significance.
Our next speaker here is Bill Baker. He's a retired sheriff's investigator from Santa Barbara County who began working homicide in late 1970. Soon after his arrival in the unit, he was assigned a cold case, that of a teenaged couple found shot to death in a lean-to shack by a secluded Pacific Ocean beach in June of 1963.
At some point, I decided to send out a teletype to California law enforcement agencies, just basically detailing our crime from 1963, just asking for anyone that had any similars, and this has just been California. That same day, I got two calls. The first one was from San Francisco Police Department Homicide Inspector Bill Armstrong, who told me, in his opinion, our case was that of Zodiac. And he said, in fact, that after reviewing the details of the crime, he would never think about Zodiac cases again without including Santa Barbara in that. The second call was from Dave Struve, that's S-T-R-U-V-E, who was a crime analyst with the state of California, the CINI, which is the Criminal Investigation Identification Bureau. And he had also worked with Mel Nicolai, whose job was basically to coordinate all of the Zodiac cases for all the various agencies. Dave echoed basically what Bill Armstrong had said, that it looks like a Zodiac case. So from that point on, once I was able to talk to most of the investigators that were originally assigned to the Zodiac cases, and also to just study the cases themselves. But the one that stood out, of course, was the Lake Berryessa case, because of the similarities there. And any of you that know about Lake Berryessa would know the kind of similarities I'm talking about. But since that time, I've been a believer in Zodiac being the person responsible for killing the Bobby and Linda in 1963, and I'm still a believer.
In 1972, after extensive investigation and shared resources, Sheriff John Carpenter of Santa Barbara County issued a press release. He stated the joint investigation teams had concluded Bobby Domingos and Linda Edwards had been murdered by the serial killer calling himself the Zodiac. At the time these murders happened, in 1963 and 1964, no one had ever heard of the Zodiac. He didn't exist, or at least his kills had not been discovered or announced by him. By the time 1968 to 1970 came around, the Zodiac Killer was a well-known mystery and a haunted entity. He was a killer that investigators knew was cunning, fearless, and very dangerous. The revelation that the Zodiac Killer started his murderous attacks earlier than previously thought threw open a chilling new chapter in the investigation. With this unsettling discovery, the haunting question looms larger than ever. Just how many lives did this elusive predator truly claim?
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.